Yeah. No.
Yeah, we are live this weekend.
Yep. Rest assured, we are here in the studio.
How you doing this morning?
I'm doing pretty good. It's gonna be an interesting show today. We got a lot to talk about. Some stuff's kind of heavy, kind of sad, kind of real, and then we've got a pretty entertaining guest on in the second half that'll hopefully uplift
bring us back up. Yeah, because it's a really weird morning anyway. It's raining and
it kind of suits the mood of the first half of the show.
Yeah. Well, with second half, we have Wes Hurt.
Yes.
Yeah, I said his name right.
He did. How can you mess that up?
You can't mess that up. Joel, a famous entrepreneur from Austin, Texas. He is our guest tonight, so that's going to be great. Yeah. So today we're talking about some really terrible things that happened this weekend, or this past week.
This past week. Should we just get right into it?
Let's get right into it, because it's horrible.
Yeah, so we have had four heroin overdose deaths in the past week, back to back to back. And it's getting out of control. It's been out of control. It's getting out of control. And we had another spike in deaths this past week.
That's completely. And this is Rochester. And this is, you know, what's even sadder about this? This is only four that we actually know about.
Right.
Because when they talk about deaths and suicide, anything, even when they talk about suicides or anything, but especially overdose deaths, it's only what we know and what's reported.
Right.
So sometimes you could double that, and that's what actually happened.
Oh, easily. The four that I know of are just because I know of them either personally, like one was a former client of mine, or because we have social connections. The one guy, and this is, I'm just going to put it right out there, one of the deaths this weekend happened in a local halfway house.
Yeah, and can I tell you what? This is killing me, because I remember 2 years ago, And we're not going to name the halfway houses, but I'm going to get into this because it should make everybody angry about this kind of stuff. Is that a couple years ago in a woman's halfway house, like three people died in a very short period of time, and then recently, and then we found out, you know, we went when we talked to Becky and stuff, you know, her son, right, died in the halfway house too, right? Mm-hmm. That was pretty tragic, and now another one.
Yeah.
This is insane, because if the idea of going to a halfway house is to send someone into a safe environment where people are watching you.
Right.
You know, most of the time. And it kills me, because what happens, and I'm going to talk about this, in drug and alcohol care, the least experienced and the least paid people are the ones watching your loved ones at night.
I could go on and on about this subject. It's ridiculous. Some of the quality of staff that are being hired. And, you know, you mentioned it's a place where your loved ones are supposed to be watched. They're supposed to have some sort of near constant supervision. Halfway houses, they are what we consider congregate care level 2, meaning they are considered a facility where clients need 24-hour supervision.
Right.
Right. If they didn't require 24-hour supervision, they would be in supportive living.
Right.
But so these are clients that in a halfway house require 24-hour supervision. And having worked in halfway houses, I know that staff are supposed to be regularly accounting for and checking on clients. Now, this one guy that just passed away over the weekend, he died on a Friday evening, and he was not found until Saturday morning.
That's insane.
And it wasn't even because of staff doing checks. So allegedly, and this is according to a source that was close to this individual that passed away, an outside person was trying to reach him through his cell phone. Couldn't get a hold of him Friday night. Couldn't get a hold of him Saturday morning. Apparently contacted either someone in the house or staff at the house. And then they went and checked on him. And he was dead in his bedroom overnight at the halfway house.
Yeah. That is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the stuff. And we have all these, you know, because not everybody's like saying, well, who regulates these people? Well, there's the New York State Oasis Department regulates them.
Mm-hmm.
The New York State Justice Center regulates them. But what happens is places, and I'm not saying places cover it up, but they will do everything they can to protect themselves rather than trying to figure out how they can better, you know, serve individuals that are dying. And I think that's what's going on.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's in our own community. I think people should be mad about this?
Absolutely. I'd be furious if that was my loved one that passed away in a halfway house. And I'm not saying, I made a comment a few minutes ago about, you know, the quality of staff not always being that great. There are some amazing, amazing, fantastic, wonderfully gifted, talented, caring people that work in this field. But as Joel said, you know, you are also dealing with a lot of people that don't have a lot of experience and are not getting paid a lot of money. So there are those staff members that may not be completely invested in the job. They're just kind of...
Right.
Yeah.
They're not...
disenchanted.
Or a lot of them are... I'm going to tell you what, a lot of them are working other places.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just taking this as a moonlighting job.
Especially overnights. So they'll work their full-time job during the day, and then they figure an overnight shift is kind of cake. You know, they can sit down and watch their iPad all night long.
Right. But it's, you know, but listen, this is, you know, all the deaths here were tragic this week, but I get very upset when people talk about this. And we're not going to bring up this halfway house, other than I will tell you what, if you check their administrative offices or where the place is at, where the money actually goes, is like a palace. So with 5 or 6 vice presidents and all this other stuff, the people that, all the money that should be spent in these halfway houses should be spent on people watching your loved ones, you know, not on smart TVs and big boardrooms and all this other stuff. It should be spent on the care. And that's what has to be looked at. A lot of these places, all this money goes to is going to administrative costs of people that probably walk into that house maybe once a year.
Yeah. I keep thinking, how does that happen? How does somebody die on a Friday and they're not found until a Saturday in a halfway house?
Right.
And this is also the same house where the doors are locked. Bedroom doors are locked.
It's insane.
Which I see both sides of that. I see that, you know, as a client, you have a right to, you know, privacy. But then on the other hand, in a congregate care level 2 facility, should you really be allowed to have your door locked from the inside in a place where you are not, where you require 24-hour supervision?
Yeah. And it's so funny because, well, it's not even funny, but they're so embarrassed by this that they told their staff the person just passed away in their sleep.
Yeah.
So this is, you know, really. So if you're listening or anybody is in any kind of, you know, regulatory compliance job, this is the kind of stuff that needs to get investigated.
Right.
Plus, another thing, too, we have the worst epidemic going on right now.
Yeah.
And if we have to address it. We're so worried about this stupid election going on. You know, and our country is getting killed by this epidemic. And we're worried about, you know, Trump and Hillary.
Right. And his extracurricular activities.
Yeah. All that stuff. We have people that are dying every single day. In one city, 4 reported deaths.
Yeah.
In a short period of time.
The other thing that this made me think of, we talked about this on a previous show, but there are some halfway houses. There are some treatment centers that will not allow Narcan.
And this is one of them. This was one of them before that was afraid to use Narcan, which is what saves lives. And I'm going to bring this up because I'm glad you brought this up, because there's something else wonderful that happened this past week. It was actually made the papers in the Southern Tier. But they're afraid about their insurance coverage. If their staff is capable enough to give Narcan to save a life.
Which is not dangerous, by the way. If anyone has done a Narcan training, Narcan's not dangerous. I could take a shot of Narcan up my nose right now and it's not going to do anything to me.
Right. So, but they were actually, this center where this person died was actually afraid because of insurance reasons at one time. I'm thinking maybe they have it now and now they're training the staff. But
it's insane.
This is where the priorities are. When someone's constantly worried about all that kind of stuff and not worried about the care of the people, then really, you have to really look at some place like this. It's really horrible. Now, when you talk about Narcan, recently, because I always talk, you know, I'm down during the week, I'm down in Hornell, New York, and a police officer recently saved a kid that was dying from an overdose. Because he actually had all the cars now in the Hornell Police Department to carry Narcan.
Right.
And they had trained their officers to be ready for this, and he was able to save this kid's life.
That's awesome.
But, you know, this is another, it's very interesting. So now we have law enforcement, and I'm not saying all law enforcement, but in Hornell, New York, they have made this a priority. A little small city like this has made it a priority to help people that are addicted to opiates and heroin. They even wrote a grant where people in treatment centers can ride along with them so they can get the right help.
That's how it should be.
It should be that way. But it's like when you look at, you know, I'm so amazed by that police department down there. It's the chief and his whole crew. They have made this a focus. You know, when the police are getting a bad rap these days, you look like a place like Cornell Police Department is actually looking at the epidemic as a problem, and they really want to help. So,
well, yeah.
Yeah.
Look at the ripple effect that addiction causes.
That's right. In fact, they look at it. So if they find a person that's committing a crime and they think they're an addict, rather than automatically just cuffing them, throwing them into jail, they'll actually offer them treatment. I think it's just wonderful.
Yeah.
So look at so a little town like Cornell, the police save a kid dying of heroin through Narcan. And then in a halfway house, a drug and alcohol licensed halfway house, a person dies overnight in a bed from an overdose. Yeah, pretty insane.
We're in insane times. You know, speaking of the deaths this weekend, too, I also want to mention another individual. Rochester is such a small world. This morning, I woke to a Facebook message from a friend of mine, and she was like, hey, check out this guy's GoFundMe page. He's making anti-heroin shirts. I can't say what they say on them because we're on live radio, but it's F heroin, and the U of the F word is the semicolon. That whole thing,
really?
Like,
okay.
You know, your story doesn't end here. So anyways, his son, unfortunately, is one of the several people that's being buried today because
that's
of heroin
insane.
Overdose.
Four deaths, four people being buried today.
Yeah, and I didn't realize that. So when I looked at his GoFundMe page, I sent him a message on Facebook. I'm like, hey, you know, someone mentioned you. And, you know, I told him who I was and what I do. And he responded back to me. He's like, yeah, you know, I'm actually burying my second born son today.
Wow.
Because of this. And he's interested in partnering up with us to help spread his message. But I'll post about it on our Facebook page.
We can bring it up if you want.
Yeah. It's again, it says Rocco Stagnito is his name. His son was Anthony. And he's working on making these shirts, these F heroin shirts.
Wow.
So.
Yeah. And that's another thing, too. Everybody doesn't realize, when you lose your own, you know, your own child.
I can't imagine.
That's the worst grief.
I can't imagine.
Anyone can go through.
Especially to something like this.
Yeah. And it's, and even, it's getting, it's, it gets media attention every once in a while, but I still go back. I mean, I'm really, you know, I don't want to always badmouth the state, but, you know, there's all kinds of ways now. They hold up a lot of, through dysregulation and all kinds of things, on trying to get treatment centers and, you know, additional beds and stuff going on. We're not paying attention to this. And this is the thing that's going to get us in the end. I mean, we're worried about overseas and ISIS and everything else. This is, you know.
Look in your own backyard.
Where our own backyard is being killed off. And it's just terrible.
Yeah. I got a message at work the other day from, and I'll say it because he wanted us to spread the word, but from Freedom House here in Rochester. It's the intensive residential treatment program for adult men. They have open beds.
Wow.
He's like, spread the word, you know, to the other providers in the area. We have open beds at Freedom House.
Yeah, how is that not?
I don't know how we have. I mean, it's great that there's open beds, but how do we have any open beds in any treatment centers here in Rochester when we have such a problem?
We do have such a problem, and it's just, and it's not going away. And, you know, that's what we're all about. So it's not. That's what makes this job a little tough, because we know what's going on behind the scenes, and you know what's happening out there. But a lot, I mean. Kids are just—it's very young people.
Yeah, and
that are just dying off.
Yeah, this is the second client that I had in the past few months that I met with. I won't say where I work. I met with client, and then a couple months later, I found out that once they were placed in a treatment center, they died.
Yeah, this is another thing. It's so funny because I had a conversation recently with an African-American counselor in his 60s. And he's talking about, you know, days back in Harlem when he worked in a center and a clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just saying how, you know, man, heroin just was how he said, well, it's just an old black man's drug. He said back in the 70s, he said, nobody, you know, it was tough to deal with it back then. It was tough to treat it. And it was like now he said, man, when you look at it today, it's like it reversed itself to white middle America.
Completely reversed itself. I've shared about this on the show.
Yeah.
That's what I was in treatment for 13 years ago. 14, 15 years ago.
It did a flip.
I was the only one who was like the odd man out.
Yeah. So it's not like it's not in like Harlem anymore or down in the South Bronx. It's like now in Iowa, you know, or some kid in Minnesota or, you know, Rochester or anywhere.
Anywhere. That's the key word. It's anywhere.
Right. That and we can't get a hold of it. I mean, this is the sad. They were showing one day, I think it was CNN did a report about how heroin is, you know, comes up through the country. And because of the fact that it's, you know, the opiate, you know, the mm-hmm. opioid or how they produce it, it also comes up in a different way
yeah.
to make, you know, oxy or whatever. Yeah. So it's confusing. It confuses law enforcement and it confuses how, you know, things are entered here. But, you know, it comes up through government planes. It comes up to a regular, yeah. you know, Delta flight. It comes up. It's not even hidden anymore.
No. Look at that stuff. Have you heard about pink?
Yes.
Yeah, Utah. Was it Utah? They just had a handful of deaths, a couple 12-year-old, 13-year-olds, mm-hmm. but they were buying this chemical. It's like I won't be able to get the numbers and letters straight, but again, it's a chemical. You can buy it online and the kids are calling it pink.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, yeah, I wonder what it is. So.
It's like a synthetic opiate.
Well, you know,
it's all chemically, you know, it's all manufactured.
Well, cuz I remember when I was overseas, you know, yeah, well, a long time ago, I think I was like 17 or 18, and in Okinawa, they had a, it was called Buddha, mm-hmm. which is a bud of some flower over right. there, and it turned everything pink. You know, and you take, you know, you and your buddies would get, even back then, I'm talking like 1974, 75, a pin joint was $40. It was just crazy.
Wow. So you would smoke it.
You would smoke it, and four of you could get off on this. And everything just turned pink.
Yeah.
Like the world, like, just turned pink.
Like seeing the world through rose-colored glasses.
It was the oddest thing. And I never heard about it until back up in, you know, I'm not going to mention the guy. He was a tattoo artist with me back in the 90s. And he was talking about his friends was getting this little flower bud through Toronto, Canada. And he said, man, it makes everything pink. I said, I know what that is. It's called Buddha. By then, it had a different name.
Right.
To it, probably some Canadian name. Yeah. But yeah, it's like that stuff just surfaces every once in a while. Like you don't know, like you have to be in the know. I just wonder if the chemical derivative from that is.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know anything about making you see pink. I just know that it's a very strong synthetic opiate. It's actually stronger than heroin. And these mm-hmm. kids are buying it online. Like you can literally, you can get it.
Right.
Really,
so it's just,
really
it's just
easily.
Crazy. You know, and everyone knows where this all started. We constantly talk about the pharmaceutical companies that made, you know, opiate popular. I mean, made opium or, you know,
opiate
popular again. I mean, that was, there's a story about it. There's probably going to be a movie someday about those three guys mm-hmm. that completely sold the pharmaceutical companies on this. They completely lied to the medical community, even recreated through Harvard Medical Journal. They created this whole thing.
Went through that decades ago with the benzos.
Right.
It was the whole, you know, mother's little helper, the Valium.
Yeah.
They sold the crap out of that stuff.
Right. So, but we're not looking at them, which we should, because I remember still listening in an old economy class one time, somebody tell me that, through economics, that by doing anything to the pharmaceutical companies would ruin our country. And the fact we would just, the stock market would create, I mean, they just mm-hmm. create this great story of despair that's going to happen if, you know, we address or attack the pharmaceutical companies. So.
And these issues are always going to be there. We just have to keep fighting the good fight.
Yeah, I think we're going to. I mean, but this is something that's scary. You know,
it is.
We have people dying and.
It is. You know?
It's just terrible. Who's the other guy? You said another guy was...
Which guy?
No, we were talking in the green room before you came mm-hmm. in about the... Because I thought there was a kid where his girlfriend died. He was riding around with her in a car. But
yeah, that happened several months back. A young woman overdosed and the boyfriend kind of lost the stuff and freaked out and was driving around with her. But most recently in headlines, the other one that I was talking about was this Daniel Brudzinski guy.
Yeah.
Did you hear about that?
Yeah. Through you.
Yeah. Well, no, I didn't know if you knew about it before because it was all over the local news several months ago. But this woman, Melissa Ottaby, she was a heroin addict. I guess that according to her family, she got hooked on opiates after having a surgery. And it progressed to the point where she was using the internet to kind of promote herself.
Right.
Right. So anyways, she connected with this Daniel Rodzinski guy, state employee, making buku bucks through the state. He hires her to spend the evening with her. She's apparently, you know, shooting heroin all evening long. She overdoses. What does this guy do? He leaves her. He flushes her heroin. He disposes of needles. He waits 75 minutes to even call for help.
Wow.
Right. So he was arrested, and it was all over the media because it was controversial, because people were saying, you know, he needs to be charged with, you know, whatever, negligence or manslaughter, whatever.
Right, because he knew about it.
Yeah, the only thing he was able to be charged with was evidence tampering, and he actually was sentenced to jail just this past week.
Wow, that's, well, I'm glad he was sentenced to jail.
Yeah, so the judge is getting a lot of praise.
Yeah.
Because he's holding this guy accountable for his actions because they're saying, you know, you were the nail in her coffin.
That's, well, and that's so true, too. It was like that, and that's just in, and I'm sure that happens more than we realize.
Happens all the time. I have very strong feelings about that because a friend of mine, you've heard me talk about him, Brandon Doe.
Right.
He went into a coma back in 1999 because he overdosed, and the people that he was there with, they didn't call for help. He went without oxygen for so long that he ended up in a persistent vegetative state, and he did not pass away until last summer.
Wow.
Right. So if you are out there and you are with somebody and they overdose, call for help. There are laws that protect people.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, no. And I mean, that was the whole idea of having, you know, a Narcan kit for every family now.
Yeah.
I mean, it goes, you know, it's like having ibuprofen in your...
I understand being scared. I was in a position myself years ago where I was with somebody that overdosed, and it's scary, but you gotta do the right thing.
No, it is. It's horrible. I remember one time my buddies, this is maybe it lightens it up a little bit.
Yeah.
But they left me. I was hanging off this rail off a bridge, and they couldn't get me up, and they're like, well, see ya.
They just left you there?
They left me hanging.
Literally.
I'm like, I finally got myself up, and then I finally found them. Like, what? Are you kidding me? Like, well, they figured out what? Fall and die, and then what do you would know? Yeah, that's your buddies. That's like, really?
Well, there was a statistic. What they said, 80% of heroin users inject or use with somebody.
Yeah.
But 80% of heroin overdose deaths, they're found alone.
Yeah. Well,
so what does that say?
Right. They're not alone when they were dead.
Peace out.
Yeah. That's what happens. Yeah, because you're also with people that are, you know, sketchy anyway. A lot of times your friends, and you know how it
your
is
friends,
when you're
we'll
using,
put that in quotations.
Right,
yeah. A lot of times a lot of times your using friends are not your real friends.
Right. Yeah. They can be later on sometimes.
If yeah.
They, you know, find sobriety, but many times they're not. So
yeah.
So we got to lighten this up a little bit.
Yeah, it was pretty heavy, but that's the reality of it, right?
Right.
Some heavy stuff going on.
Yeah. We're pretty, you know, we're going to be entertaining.
Yeah, we'll flip it up a little bit. The second half of the show, we got Wes on, and he seems like a pretty cool dude.
And you need to, you know, help us out.
Cheer us up, man.
Yeah, the cupcake man, right?
Hey, cupcake.
Right. And other things.
Genius. We'll be back.
We'll be back. All right. We're back, everybody. We have a fantastic guest for the second half, right? We have Wes Hurt.
I'm so excited about this. For those of you that listened to last week's show, we had some technical difficulties, so I was really hoping that we would be able to make this work, and thank you so much, Dave, for making this happen. We have Wes Hurt from Clean Cause on the phone right now.
Morning, hey, Wes.
Good morning, guys. How are y'all?
How
We're
you
good.
Doing?
I love the y'all. He's from Austin, Texas,
I know.
By the way.
Yeah, you know, and before we even get started with this interview, we have, because I don't get a lot of Austin people, but do you actually know Aaron Franklin?
Aaron Franklin? No, I don't know him.
Okay.
So,
well, all right.
I had his barbecue one time.
All right, because this is the problem I run into.
Joel's obsessed. He's obsessed. This has come up at least on 5
Right,
because
we can't get, like, every time, Carrie's in Austin all the time. And I cannot get her to get me a shirt. So, because she says, I am not standing in that line to get you a t-shirt So if you knew him, that would have been easier. Then you could just tell him, hey, you know, because I promote his barbecue on the show because I just, and I don't think I've ever had it. Just I think it's the coolest thing. Every time I watch the YouTube clips and.
Yeah, and so you've promoted it, and I think the least you could, you know, deserve is a shirt from him. You know?
Right.
So, I mean, what the heck?
See, he should take some cues from you, because
if you can tell him that I constantly promote his barbecue, and I don't know how you would even do that, other than you go stand in that line that's, what, 9 hours or something.
no connections, yeah. No barbecue connections.
Oh, but if you'd ever do, you know, I want a shirt.
But yeah, like I said, he should take some cues from you, because when I first connected with you through social media, one of the coolest things was that you reached out and you're like, hey, what size do you wear? I'll hook you guys up with some shirts, hook you guys up with some drinks. Like, thank you. It was amazing.
Yeah, I'm not that technically savvy, but, you know, and he's actually a friend of mine, too, on Facebook. But
what's weird about that shirt thing is when I first started this, I would see somebody, and the first message I would do would just say, like, what size shirt do you wear and where do you live?
Yeah.
And men were like, large, and then women were like blocking me. And
right.
I was like, no, wait, no, I'm just trying to spread the word, and I'm moving quick. No,
like, I'm not a creeper. I promise you, wow. I'm not creeping.
Yeah. And a couple of those, the blocks remain. And it's just like, oh, what? Oh, anyway,
well, Carrie blocks me, yeah, so.
No. But so for people that aren't familiar, I mean, I know that I've been sharing about you on the Sober Life Radio page. For people that aren't familiar with you or with Clean Cause, can you just tell us a little bit about what it is, kind of how this whole thing came about?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. So just to give a little context, so I'm kind of a serial entrepreneur. Most, you know, 99%, I'm pretty cliche in terms of 99% of my ventures were failures. But about 10 years ago, I started a cupcake business in Austin, Texas. It was called Hey Cupcake. It grew to be, you know, a pretty decent sized business in Austin. And we had these old school Airstreams with giant cupcakes on top. And it was this kind of fantastical, business. And, you know, I never grew up thinking I was going to sell cupcakes. It was very, very odd business. Especially that I had two doctors in my family, my dad and my brother, and I grew up cupcakes. And they said, oh, Wes. You know, like one of those
right.
Kind of Wes's.
Well, Carrie has eaten one of your
cupcakes.
Yeah,
I go to Austin about once a year, and Hey Cupcake is something I'm familiar with. So it's, again, another cool connection.
Cool. Yeah. And so, you know, I've been an alcoholic for 20 plus years, but throughout that business and as it kind of grew, my addiction grew as well. And I eventually, went from alcohol and cocaine into opiates. And then I'll kind of fast forward, about 7 years into my business, I was popping about 35 Vicodin a day. I was, living with a homeless guy. And which made me homeless too, I guess. We were homeless together,
right.
In a little warehouse office, and smoking crack and all, just insanity, and left my wife at home, literally left my business, just walked away from the business.
Wow.
and just destined. I just didn't know the time it was going to be, but was going to die. And honestly, it came to a point for me where suicide became a real option.
Right.
And I hung out in a cemetery for about 9 months, every single day for 9 months.
Wow.
Crying. I had a rope, the whole deal. You know, I researched every way to die
because
I wanted to make it the quickest. Mm-hmm. And bottom line is, it just one day I was sitting there and at night sleeping, my heart was doing some really weird stuff. And for a minute I thought maybe that was going to be it. And so I called my wife and I said, hey, I think I'm going to eventually die,
right.
You know, and she had drawn a really hard line and she said, come home right now if you want to get clean.
Wow.
And she hadn't done that yet. She had kept saying, you can't come back until.
Right.
And in this moment, for some reason, she did that. And literally, I still had pills. I still had crack. I was sitting there with the guy, and I looked at my guy who I called Uncle Frank. He was this huge 60-year-old black man. I became really close to, drugs or not. And I looked at him, and I said, she's telling me to go home, you know? And he just looked at me, and he said, you got to go. And I was like, oh, my. And there's, like, this weird sadness of walking away from that addiction and having to make that moment. And I wanted to go the morning. Yeah. I wanted to go in the morning.
Yeah.
Like, wow. You know, it's like, I just want to finish this up, then, right. You know? And it was like, no, right now. And so I just looked in and I dropped everything and I said, I'm going home. Wow. And I went home, and then that was the beginning. Now, it was pretty crazy. And then I went through withdrawals at home. I've been to 6 rehabs, 1 psych ward, blah, blah, blah. I've had all the high-end, you know, detox stuff. But this one, we went straight through it.
Wow, you did it at home, you said?
Yeah, I did it at home, and it was pretty bad. And, right. But it also was really great because it wasn't just another one of those go spin, you know, spin right. dry.
It was on your terms, and sometimes that's what it takes for people. You were done. It was your decision. You were done.
Yeah, a lot of, and it's interesting because we had talked about Greg Laumann did the same thing. He actually did his detoxing at home after several different rehabs. And
wow. So your wife was with you during your home detox, and that's,
you know, what's funny is she's a really strong woman. She did not. She was there.
Right.
She was just there, but her terms were, come home right now and get clean. But she went to work.
Yeah.
She didn't listen to any of my whining or complaining.
Right.
She wouldn't really, she was very sweet, but she was not above and beyond to like try to like, you know, wipe my brow or clean
right,
up.
Right, like coddling you, yeah.
No, there wasn't any of that. I basically took a lot of hot showers and hot baths. And
yep.
Said,
I've been there.
I don't know how. And I was like, I just don't know how I'm ever going to make it through this. I just don't. And so I've got a special passion for helping opiate addicts too, not to separate them and feel like they're harder or better or whatever. Hey, they're better addicts, but you know, it's like there's just something about that for me. I guess just because I experienced it.
I agree with you. That was my poison of choice, I guess you could say. So I totally relate to that.
Did you feel that? I mean, like when you went through all those rehabs, because I also run a rehab out at, you know, down here in New York, and we just run into the same thing where people are just coming through multiple times over and over and over again. And some of them, they just get clean on their own. It's like, well, you know, I'm not going to sit in this, you know, in this hospital listening to the same old thing, you know, and just wasting a lot of time. And it was when they went home and had to deal with it themselves, you know, their own agony. Because a lot of times what happens, you know, it's like that tree falls, you know, in the woods kind of thing. You know, at our place, you know, when somebody starts going through any kind of agony or their discomfort, you know, the nursing staff is there to help them out and take care of them. And then minutes after they leave, they start using again. And I always feel that sometimes we just need to let them sit for a while in it and not always just run to their, you know, to the pain of it all. But
wow.
Yeah, that's tricky timing in withdrawals. And I've always, you know, for other people that I've watched and tried to help, it's just,
right.
It's a bear, you know, and, you know, not to go too super spiritual with it, but I really do attribute it to that because, mm-hmm. I mean, I was so close to killing myself at one point that it's like when you jump off something really high and you're sitting there and like, it takes longer than you're thinking, but you eventually just have to step. Like I was at that point of just saying, I just have to step.
Yeah.
Just have to step. And ironically, and I really didn't plan this because I'm just thinking about it. I'm actually sitting in the spot right now at that cemetery that I was 2.5 years ago. What's really weird is that I sat here and in about 400 yards away is a and I don't know if I'm allowed to say this. I'm just going to say it.
Yeah.
There's an AA meeting.
Yeah, you can say that.
Oh, you can say that, sure.
So I would look at that place every day, and I can see it right now. And it was just, I'm so happy because people would be like, that's morbid. You're going back there to like re-experience. And I'm like, no, I just don't see it the same way. And it's cool.
So you're looking at it from the other side. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty. You know, it's pretty awesome. I mean, so where I'm at right now is I started to get sober, got through the withdrawals. I'm a guy, my mind, like most addicts or many addicts, I'd say, is racing all the time. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's I'm always seeking to create something. I don't know if it's just discomfort of being present, but I just always want more, 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 and I'm still that way. I'm not going to lie. That's just who I am. So I was sitting in a meeting, actually, and within 30 days, I had this idea. And it was just, you know, could we create, where can I find, I love cupcakes in terms of the business. It made people happy. And it was a real simple thing. And we had these Airstreams, like I said. So it was really cool, just embodied kind of like idealism of just going after your dream. And I used to say, you're vanilla, never stop vanilla dreaming. Mm-hmm. So it had like this fun, whimsical thing to it. Yeah. But for me, it lost purpose after the creation came to life and was successful.
Right.
And I was like, so what am I doing now? Am I like fueling obesity? I mean, like, I don't even know what I'm doing.
Right.
Why am I doing that? So and that's part of the reason for those latter years of that 7 years at the cupcake place that I was just, there was a lot of angst of not understanding why I was doing anything that I was doing. I didn't know. So, you know, bottom line is I just wanted something with purpose, and the word clean came to mind. And actually, that's not true. Sober came to mind, and I called my sister immediately, and I said, I got this idea to do a bottled water company where it's like, you know, we create this funding, and it's, you know, it's called Sober. And she goes, ooh, I don't know.
Yeah.
She goes, I wouldn't carry a bottle of water called Sober.
Right.
Because then everybody's going to think I'm an alcoholic.
Exactly.
And I'm like, and I go, oh, okay. So she goes, what about clean?
Yeah.
And I go, ooh. And then a little bit later that day, it was clean cause. And then literally within like probably 6 weeks, we had water in a bottle and we just started pushing. And, you know, it's, the idea of the 50%, cause I like to clarify that sometimes cause, you know, someone made a comment on your page when you posted about this thing coming. I don't want to name any names. It doesn't matter. It wasn't even that bad. And they said, first of all, I guess I should say half our profits go to support people in recovery from alcohol and drug addiction. The Give Back Initiative, where the money actually goes, are 30-day sober living scholarships. We've done 12 of them, not a lot, but it's a start, and we're a new business. And, you know, we reinvest into more employees, and we're a business that has to reach, economies of scale.
Well,
and so forth, to produce more funding. But it's tricky because people, you know, there's a lot of skepticism. And I tell people all the time, I really don't get that reactive like I used to or defensive to it, because I look at a lot of other organizations that claim things, and the reason why there's skepticism is because they don't do what they say they're going to do.
Right.
So if anything, the burden of proof is on us to say, just to walk the talk.
Right.
And so I don't know why I wanted to say that. I didn't disrespect or feel attacked by that comment. I felt like it was a valid gut reaction.
Yeah.
Right.
If that guy's out there, it's all good.
Yeah. Well, I liked how straightforward you were. You were just like, you know, it's, well, the truth is we're not nonprofit. We have to profit. I mean, money does make the world go around in some scenarios. In order to help, you got to have some funding.
Yeah, well, and exactly. So the reason why it was the 50% mechanism was because you can get investors that still have good hearts. They want to make a return, but they're able to help people at the same time. Like that's a great investment for a lot of people who are pretty wealthy already, but want to see something happen, you know? And so again, I won't go too far on the mechanism of it, but one other thing is that the real thing about this too is to create a sustainable source of funding.
Yes.
Okay, so and it's chosen by the consumer. You know, you're going to get something in exchange and hopefully you feel better, but I sometimes say this, I say that I'm kind of trying to help create a private solution to a public problem.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, I like how you word that.
Yes.
Yeah, well, we don't have the same bureaucracy and red tape and people telling me I can't do something or can do something, which is what I really like as an addict, too. I like that control.
Of course.
But, you know what I mean? They just, it's like, we're going to go after this. And we're not going to sit there and pick it somewhere, which I have respect for, saying, listen to me as an addict, which I participate in, you know? But I'm saying, let's go after this. Let's kick some butt.
Right.
You know, as addicts in recovery, most of my employees are in recovery, and it's been just radical to watch them grow and me learn from them.
Well, that's just another way you're giving back, too, because not only are you creating the scholarships based on people that are buying the water, the energy drinks, the merchandise, you're employing people that are in recovery, which is going to help them maintain their recovery.
Absolutely. And so the broader dream is that this thing creates so much funding that we can continue to do exactly that and then create other sustainable sources, invest in other people or people in recovery that have the same vision that want to have a good quality life. You know, I'm an entrepreneur. I believe in the American dream. I believe that you have the right to make whatever you want to make if you're doing it legally and ethically. On the flip side, and I don't believe someone should tell me what I have to do with my money, but I believe at the same time that if you make that type of money or if you're really successful, give it freaking back.
Right, you're right.
Because what are you doing? Are you just making a pile of money to lay on like DuckTales? I don't know if y'all remember that.
Oh,
show.
Yeah, those gold coins. Yes. How can you like dive into them?
You would dive into it. And I'm like, I ask my friends that are pretty wealthy, I go, dude, what is the purpose?
Right.
It has no purpose. It's dead. It's static money sitting right there that could do a lot.
Right.
And so I get pretty amped up and kind of hyper about it, but that's I call that the clean dream for us, you know? It's like, can we kick some ass? Excuse me. Oops.
That's okay.
And create some serious impact because of the consumers making a decision to believe in their dream. Hey, and I'm going to drink that water.
Do you still have that little golf cart thing you drive around in that says clean? And what is that?
I do. The funny thing about that, which is funny and not, depending on who you are, is that used to be the bubble buggy, what I called the bubble buggy. It was a cupcake promotional vehicle.
That's awesome.
It was pink. Yeah, it was pink, and I had a bubble machine rigged up to the back of it, and I would drive through neighborhoods drunk with bubbles flying out. And kids would just stop and be waving and pointing, and I was like this, like, drunk Robin Hood or something.
I just love this thing.
Well, in the very first song that we played was The Candy Man.
Right.
And it has come full circle with this story here.
No, it's just a great...
Yeah, what's great... No, sorry, I interrupted you.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say the crazy thing about that is that I got a DWI in that.
Stop.
I swear, I got a DWI about a quarter mile from my house. I had been up for a couple days. I had a pink helmet. My buddy was in it with me with a pink helmet on. I get pulled over and I get out and I go, can I get a free pass? And he says, no. And I said, okay.
I'm going to have to post a picture of this on our website at some point of that car, because that's a really, I mean, it's not funny that you got a DWI, but it's a kind of a humorous story. So,
no, it's funny you're using it for now.
And then so that's what's cool, too. And so it's been, you know, not reborn, but it's like it was repainted and then cleans on it. And then there's this little story, backstory that not many people know, to be honest with you, but I just tell them and they're like, what? And they're like, and I'm like, yeah, that kind of happens. And so, anyway, you know, if I was going to get a DWI, I'm glad it was in the bubble buggy.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, yeah.
That's amazing.
So the water you have, I mean, is this water? Because Carrie drinks it now.
Well, I drink the energy drinks. Yeah, we've got about 5 minutes left. So if you want to spend like the last few minutes just kind of, you know, however you want, talking about Clean Cause, how people can get it, what it is, that would be fantastic.
Okay, cool. So we offer a bottled water, and that really is, it's just good old-fashioned water. We have an electrolyte line, kind of like a smart water. Okay. At the end of the day, it's got a little bit of electrolytes in it, and I'm always candid about this. I'm like, it's not going to really make you that much more hydrated. You just need to drink more water.
Right.
it's just kind of, kind of what the industry does. So we're like, we're going to compete with them. But I'm really candid about that. I don't like to say, I don't want to sell snake oil. That's
right.
The bottom line.
Right. You're pretty straight shooter.
Yeah, I try to. I mean, in terms of the water, it's, you know, it's not really, we don't ship it online. It's not really going to be accessible outside of Austin or, you know, some isolated Texas markets for some time. And it's really because it's just it's a really competitive category that is just too difficult to scale, quite frankly. That said, if you want to help out, you know, buy a shirt or a hat. We also sell the energy drink online. You know, I don't like to call it energy drink because that's like, you know, the Red Bulls I used to slam, like
right.
10 of those a day.
Right.
I'm probably down to one, just keeping it full disclosure. People are like, I walk in and they're like, why are you drinking that? And I'm like, because it makes me irritable. And for
right.
some reason, I like that sometimes.
Yeah.
But so you can buy the energy drink online, which is, I call it a clean pick-me-up. Maybe it's semantics, but it's an organic beverage. It's got 20 calories per can, no artificial sweeteners. It tastes really good. And again, you know, for me right now, these things represent just kind of a beacon, hopefully, of light or kind of a conversation starter in the market. And it's just been hugely, a blessing and just super fun to be a part of. And
I was gonna say it is delicious. That's how I got kind of hooked on this. I won't say hooked on this stuff, but I ordered some and I loved it. It tasted good. It was true to what you were saying that it doesn't have a ton of like crap ingredients in it. And I carry it around with me, especially if I'm going to like sober recovery events in the area, and people will constantly ask me about it. So I'm constantly telling them about you and Clean Cause.
It's just so, what I'm so excited about is to hopefully be a steward for not AA, and that respect everything about them. I never would bring even a bottle of water or wear a shirt into those
right.
rooms.
Right.
But what I want to do, I want addicts and people in recovery to be freaking proud of this brand, to be proud that it does what it says, to be proud that we can come back and we can come back hard.
Yep.
And, you know, and I mean hard in a good way where I'm getting the chills right now saying, no, our dreams are not, you know, we don't have to just sit there and be like, now we're just, you know, second string B team or whatever it is.
Yeah.
We're going to come after you and we're going to compete with like passion and we're going to create impact. But by we, it's not me. It's really not. That's why I didn't call it Westwater.
Right.
You know, the reality is I can relapse tonight.
Right.
And hopefully that, you know, it won't happen, but it won't be dependent upon me. I'm hoping that, you know, not to sound like a political speech, but this is kind of a brand of the people, you
yeah.
know, who want it to go.
I think that's amazing. And we're at about our minute mark here, so we'll start to wrap it up. But
yeah, we'd like to talk to you again. If we ever get to Austin, we'll probably come and visit you, and we can all wait in line at the Aaron Barbecue together.
Yeah, I'll definitely look you up when I'm in Austin again.
Carries there a lot, so. But yeah, thanks a lot for
good
being
stuff.
On the show, and we're going to, you know, during the concert, we'll try to promote you as much as we can. We keep on talking about it because, you know, we just, you know, what you're doing we think is fantastic. And
yeah.
And
it was great.
Let me finish. Thank you guys so much. I just want to say this. So
we've
done 12 today. If we talk a year from now, I'm hoping it's hundreds
yes.
and that we can see that this thing really is starting to happen and create impact. So I really appreciate you guys.
Yeah. No, and keep us posted. We'll get you back on again so you can give us more updates about, you know, the amount of scholarships and the people that you're helping. Thank you so much, Wes.
Thank you very much.
Radical. Thank you, guys.
Have a good one. And so
that
was great. So,
yeah, good show. We'll see you next week, guys.
See you later. Stay sober.